Welcome to the Beer Canspiracy Show. It's a comedy podcast where three best buds sit around and talk about the supernatural, conspiracy theories, true crime, and more. Pretty much anything weird. Now, we tend to pull no punches, so a mature listening audience is advised. But if you like to have a good time, then crack open a cold one, pull up a chair, and hang out with the boys of the Beer Canspiracy Show.
New Orleans' most notorious and most mysterious serial killer, a man who broke into people's homes at night and butchered them where they slept, the man who made a demand, unlike any other killer in history, to have the entire city filled with the swinging sounds of jazz music or risk incurring his murderous wrath, the man who came to be known as the Axeman of New Orleans.
There were 12 attacks during this roughly 18 months period, and 6 deaths. They were in people's homes while they slept in their own beds.
The Axeman eerily never used his own tools. He only used what he could find on hand in the victims' households, usually an axe, which he typically left behind at the scene of the crime.
I am not a human being, but a spirit. And fell demon from hottest hell. I am what your minions call the Axeman.
Welcome to the Beer Canspiracy Show. Thank you guys for joining us tonight. This show is brought to you by Ankle Spanker Productions. Guys, we have so many new listeners that I kind of wanted to... Thank you guys for joining us. Thanks for being here. Stick with us because we love you. I always wanted to do radio, be a DJ, play songs and stuff, but I can't do it on here because, I mean, we get sued and shit.
Can do royalty-free music, DJ.
But I want the real stuff. But glad to be in your ears. I love you. Come on, guys. Give him a kiss. I always wanted to be in people's ears and just be like...
Ooh. ASMR stuff.
Yeah. Where are your hosts?
I do want some gay.
No, that's gay. Oh,
God. But he was going to make it gay.
I know.
Come on, man. I'm Aaron.
Dirty D.
I'm Sean.
All right, guys. Dirty D is with us tonight. So, for you new folks, when Dirty D's here, we get some dirty news.
Okay.
Welcome to this segment of Dirty D's Dirty News. Dirty D is always with you in your hearts. Female plane passenger fined for forcibly performing oral sex on man sitting next to her.
Where do you find these flights?
What flights are these?
Jesus Christ.
This is a Russian flight,
by the way.
I'll
pay a little extra for that.
And she's a pretty nice looker. She's a pretty good looker. If, you know, going on a little airplane and the lady is like, I'm going to suck your dick. And you're like, no, you better not. And she does it anyway. Wouldn't be upset.
Yeah. I mean, when you tell your wife, you're like, I tried to fight her off. I told her no.
And she just did it and everybody watched. No, I couldn't do it if everybody watched.
Come on, get up.
Just put the tray down.
No, performance anxiety. Yeah. A woman was detained and fined for allegedly performing oral sex on a man who tried to push her away on a plane to Russia. Oh, from Turkey to Russia. Valeria, 29, was in economy class. That's the poor class. Mm-hmm. Aboard a 5-hour flight from Antalya, Turkey to Moscow when she allegedly sexually assaulted her seat neighbor.
Nice.
Very
nice.
That's what those blankets are for, right? Like the stewardesses give you?
I think it's to keep you warm.
Oh, I thought it was for...
For blowjobs.
Blowjobs.
From your seat neighbor.
Like it says on the blanket.
It's so starchy.
Put it over you, it's like, this guy's getting a blowjob.
Look away.
No, you gotta watch.
It's got a warning on it.
She pulled down his trousers and committed violent sex. Wait.
Was the guy like, get off.
I'm out now if it's violent.
Well, it says that. She pulled down his trousers and committed violent acts of sexual nature, which I don't know what that is, but I mean, they just said she sucked his dick. So.
Teeth.
She had real sharp teeth.
Her mouth was really dry.
Fucking vampire.
Later, the neighbor stopped resisting. All of this happened in front of the flight attendants and other passengers. So at first he resisted, but then he was just like,
I can't stop her.
When in Rome, I tried. I said no.
Yeah.
And she won't stop, everybody.
Different she times nowadays. We got to let the women, you know, seem they're
yeah, probably
like as strong as men.
Like, pretty misogynistic to tell her no.
Right. Right? I mean, that's mean.
She's like a face hugger, but for down there.
I'm not going to mansplain this woman to not suck my dick.
Yeah. Don't tell her how to do it. Just let her do it.
Awful lot of teeth, though. Mm-hmm. Another outlet reported that the intoxicated passenger was allowed to finish her act. So they let her finish before they stopped her. The video from the altercation shows her rummaging in a pile of trash spilled in the galley for a $100 bill, which she had allegedly used to bribe the stewardess.
Why is there trash on the plane?
Well, it was in a trash can. So I think it says it again, but basically she bribed the stewardess with a $100 bill.
She paid someone else. This just keeps getting better. To suck
this guy's dick, but she threw it in the trash. And then the stewardess threw the $100 bills in the trash. And then this woman knocked over the trash to dig through the trash to get her $100 back.
It's for appearances. She had to throw it in the trash. She was going to get it later.
Right. Yeah, she was saving it for later, but the woman took it back out. I got to take
this. Yeah.
It's like a raccoon at night.
Fucking trash whore.
Surprisingly, the flight attendants waited until the end of the action and only then moved Valeria away, further away. The woman fought back and did not want to leave her newly made companion.
Damn, dude.
Valeria was also accused of smoking an e-cigarette and pouring hot water on the floor. Those things are not comparable.
So I am a
different levels.
This is a new thing.
Well, you don't want to pull her off and then get hit in the line of duty.
What's with the hot water?
I don't know.
She was mad and threw it on the floor.
Where's the hot water coming into play?
Maybe they make tea over there, like in England. Is that a big thing?
Okay. Hot chocolate. We're in Turkey.
Turkey to Moscow, but that's pretty close.
All right.
I mean, I don't know.
As long as it's not on my dick.
Hot towel water.
That's fine.
She allegedly tried to bribe the stewardess with $100. When the stewardess threw it away, she fished through the trash for it. Passengers are reported to have cheered and clapped when police finally came on board to detain her. Not after.
Hell yeah. That bitch sucks me dick.
The other guy in the back. Hey, this seat's open. This one's open. You can put her next to me.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
While being escorted off by the police, she allegedly told a cop, "I won't go anywhere with a sucker like you." She's the sucker.
Look who's talking.
She told BAZ Media, "Everything was fine. I had a good time on the plane." Well, that's a little more than that.
Must have been the elevation made her feel weird.
A little loopy. Yep.
She claimed to have been fined 500 rupees. Or $5.64 American. Okay.
I was like, is that like five diamonds?
So $500 to suck a... she paid...
Well, 500 rupees, which is $5.64.
$5.
That was what she was fined.
Okay.
That's what she does.
But she did pay $100 to be able to do the act.
But she got it back.
Yeah, she got it back.
So $5 or six. Let's bump it up.
$6. $106. Well, she got her $100 back.
I'm bad at math. Mm-hmm.
So this is her.
Fuck yeah, dude.
Nice, respectable Russian lady. The show on her $100, she dug out the trash.
There's trash on the floor.
So anyway, I've got my plane ticket for Moscow already booked. So I'll be heading out and seeing how lucky I can get.
Did she go to jail or anything?
No, she got fined $5.64.
All right. I mean, that's fine. I'm good with it. And that guy, he just had the best flight of his life.
He just had a lot of explaining to do when he got home.
So what if it's like a 6-hour flight and that
it was a 5-hour flight.
Dang. So did she start towards the end, I guess?
I don't know.
No, she did it for 6 hours.
Yeah.
5 hours.
Oh, okay. I was like, what if they complete and they're like, yay. And then they're just like sitting there.
They got to sit there for another
5 hours.
4 hours and 55 minutes.
Yep. You're like, so...
You'll do that again?
I'm going to take a nap.
And that concludes the segment of Dirty D's Dirty News.
Okay. All right, guys. That was Dirty D's Dirty News. Now he's going to be presenting our topic tonight. What are we talking about?
Question.
What are we talking about?
The Axeman of Nolans.
The Axeman!
Local guy?
Local.
Yeah, local. Local. Well, I don't know about going that far, but
he's local. He's cleaning up the streets of Bourbon.
Well, right? Goodness.
Well, if you don't like Italian grocery store owners.
I do not.
Well, then,
Just, dude, if I'm going to the store, I need to buy more than just pasta and spaghetti.
Right. They better not be fucking Italian.
Another one.
So the Axeman of New Orleans is an unidentified American serial killer that was active in New Orleans, Louisiana, in the surrounding communities from May 1918 to October 1919. This is Dirty D's first serial killer.
Oh.
Awesome. Awesome to the max.
So apparently this guy was a character in American Horror Story Season 3, which took place in New Orleans.
Coven.
Yeah. I only watched a couple episodes of that, and it was trash.
Yeah, it's not very
good. First season was awesome, and all the other ones sucked.
Yes.
But
they just get worse and worse.
Yeah. And I've watched less episodes every season.
One's great, two was all right, and then three and trash. Below is...
I tried to watch the circus one was the last one I tried to watch. Yeah,
me too.
But I only watched one or two. So press reports during the height of the panic around the murders mentioned killings very similar in the early 1911s. So it's suspected that this guy was a copycat killer for an Axeman that was murdering people a few years. Well, that been
5 years?
No, like 7 years, 6, 7 years earlier.
Oh, you said 18.
Yeah.
1918.
The Axeman was never identified and the murders remain unsolved. And that's about it. That's about all
I
got.
Good. That was good. I mean, he chopped some people.
Had some verbs in there.
Well, we didn't really talk about what he did or chopping or nothing. Oh. I mean,
well, I just assumed.
Well, he's actually doesn't kill people with an axe. He looks like an axe.
Mm. Oh, I thought Cheeto chopped.
Yeah, he's like real skinny and's got a big nose. Mm-hmm. So they called him the Axe Man.
Is his eyes towards the sharp part or by the wood part?
By the wood part, real far back.
All right.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. All right, so he killed 6 people and he injured 6 people, and that's about it.
Good story. I'm glad that you gave us some numbers.
So as the killer's name implies, the victims usually were attacked with an axe, which often belonged to the victims themselves. So that's a thing. He never brought a weapon, a murder weapon. Everybody has axes at their house, and usually like straight razors, or I guess that's what that's called, huh? Yeah. That you use the straight razor. So he usually...
Shave.
Yeah. So usually just grabs the razor and also their house axe and gives them a good chopping.
Which one which one's the worst one?
Worst?
Yes.
Axe. That's a lot of leverage behind an axe.
I feel like
if
you get hit with an axe, you're more quicker. Likely, to be knocked unconscious.
If I'm like hit like that, please kill me right there.
A straight razor is like
you're gonna very bleed out.
Sharp
Bleed out. Yeah, that would be not pleasant.
Would you rather be attacked by someone with an axe or a straight razor?
Oh, I thought that was the question.
Well, no, I think we were you were murdered.
What would I use? Like
if you were murdered with one, you would prefer to be murdered by. But if someone was attacking you and you had a chance to fight back, would you rather someone attack you with an axe or a straight razor? I would think axe because I feel like you could dodge that.
Yeah.
It's like big and heavy.
Yeah.
And then I'll just pull out my gat and blast them.
Right. In 1918.
Pull out your gat. My 1918 and
blast
gat.
Them.
Maybe gats made guns back then.
But they might. The company gat.
The musket style, though.
Established 1918. In most cases, a panel on the back door of the home was removed by a chisel, which along with the panel was left on the floor near the door. So they would like half take their door apart and sneak on in. The intruder then attacked one or more of the residents with either an axe or straight razor.
Wouldn't you hear that though? A file going through?
A chisel. You would think so, but...
Like, this is right?
It's on
chisels like...
Are we on Bourbon Street?
Still. Well, it's all over New Orleans. I don't think any of it's Bourbon Street.
You wonder if it was on Bourbon.
I feel you would hear
it. There might be one. I don't think so. I don't remember seeing Bourbon.
I think you're just assuming Bourbon Street.
I could have swore it was on Bourbon Street.
No, there's a bunch of different
Anyway, yeah, you would think you'd hear somebody like chiseling your door, but if it's
While you're asleep.
Because
they only attack them at night while they're sleeping.
Right.
If it's a big house, I don't know what size these houses are.
Mm-hmm.
And like you're in the, and like New Orleans has like the shotgun houses. I don't know if they did back then too. So if your room's all the way in the back and he comes from the front. Like that's pretty far distance to not hear. The crimes were not motivated by robbery, and the perpetrator never removed items from his victims' homes, so he just liked murdering. The majority of the Axeman's victims were Italian immigrants or Italian Americans, leading many to believe that the crimes were ethnically motivated, back when there were different ethnicities of whites, and they all hated each other.
Why did I don't understand. They hated the Italians back then.
They hated the Irish, I think, too. They hated.
Is this Gangs of New York?
No,
I think just all the different.
That was in New York.
That's right.
All the different whites hated the other whites.
Yeah.
Didn't
matter. Italians considered whites?
I think so, right?
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Didn't people hate him at one point?
Mario looks white.
He's Italian.
I don't know. You're the white guy. You tell us.
Yes. I'm pretty sure. Got him.
But yeah, they hated the Italians. They called them Dagos and.
And the Italians hate the...
Do I have to bleep that out?
Stinky Italians, yeah. You know.
The Italians hated the Sicilians.
Mm-hmm.
The Sicilians are the Italians.
But Sicilians are whiter.
No, they're darker. I don't know. From what I understand, they were somewhat mixed with blacks at some point and made darker.
Aren't their hair curly? Or am I being...
Sicilians?
Yeah.
Yeah, and real greasy.
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of...
Real quiet. Stinky, too.
Yeah. Yeah, and they look like they've been fucked by...
Yep. Come on, man. Can't bleep a whole goddamn episode out.
Some media outlets even suggested that the mafia was involved, but there was no evidence for that. Some crime analysts have suggested that the killings were related to intercourse and that the murderer was perhaps a sadist specifically seeking female victims. I don't understand how they get that either.
Were they all female victims?
Well, he killed all the women, but didn't necessarily kill all the men. They think he was like specifically wanting to kill the woman. If you're a man, like, I'm going to fucking chop you. I don't care if you live or not. I just want to kill the woman.
You kill the man first so you can do whatever you want to the woman.
Right.
That's just my thought.
Well, he incapacitated the man, but didn't care if he died or not.
Okay.
Just that.
Just so he can knock him out or whatever.
Yeah. You know, like, I mean, incapacitated him as in like chopped him up real good.
Yeah.
And
or just knocked him out so he can bang the ladies. Well, no,
he didn't really just knock anybody out. Like, he just was unsuccessful at the man murders sometimes. Mm. Like, he didn't care.
Failure.
Criminologists Colin and Damon Wilson hypothesized that the Axeman killed male victims only when they obstructed his attempts to murder women, supported by cases in which the woman of the household was murdered, but not the man. A less plausible theory is that the killer committed the murders in an attempt to promote jazz music.
You guys like jazz?
We'll get to that later.
No, you did.
There's other theories that he was like a fucking ghost specter going through. So a letter comes up later, and that's all related to that. So, victims. Joseph Maggio, an Italian grocer. I'm pretty sure they're all Italian grocers.
That was very Italian.
They're all Italian, and I'm pretty sure they're all grocers or wife of grocers.
Another one.
So Joseph Maggio, an Italian grocer, and his wife, Catherine, were attacked May 23rd, 1918, while sleeping alongside each other at their home on the corner of Upper Line and Magnolia Street, where they conducted a barroom and grocery. The killer broke into the home and then proceeded to cut the couple's throats with a straight razor. His straight razor.
The man's?
Yeah. Well, they...
The people that own the
house. They shaved their legs back then, I guess.
I meant like the man, homeowner man's
both of them. Razor. Oh, right.
It's his straight razor.
Well, that's what I said. I guess it just says it's their straight razor.
So his or hers.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. The killer never, like I said before, he never brought anything.
Did they shave their legs?
That's what I just said. I don't know. I guess. Don't know.
Oh, gross. So now, every sex back then was just terrible.
Hairy and stinky.
And, ugh.
Then you have to use sheep. intestine. Or was that the
condom? Condoms. Okay. I mean, yeah.
So he proceeded to cut the couple's throat with the straight razor. Upon leaving, he bashed their heads with an axe, perhaps in order to conceal the real cause of death. But that apparently didn't work because we know he
sliced them
with the straight razor. And then he's like, huh, do I want to be known as the straight razor murderer or the axe murderer? So I think that's probably what it was. He's like, I can't leave these guys like this. They're going to think I'm a pussy.
Axe man.
Yeah. So he's like, oh, here's an axe. Bash him in. Joseph survived the attack, but died minutes after being discovered by his brothers, Jake and Andrew. Dang. They didn't survive for very long.
Yeah, but still.
That you sucks get your throat slit and your head bashed in with an axe, and you lived long enough to see your brothers.
Pretty impressive.
Yeah, but still. Ouch.
In the apartment, law enforcement agents found the bloody clothes of the murderer, as he had obviously changed into a clean set of clothes before fleeing the scene. Even stole the man's clothes, or woman's clothes. First tranny murderer.
He took their clothes.
Yeah, well, I mean, his was probably all bloody, so he didn't want to get caught.
Smart.
A complete search of the premises was not completed by the police after the bodies were removed, yet later the bloody razor was found in the lawn of a neighboring property. So he just threw it.
They don't have
no fingerprints
or nothing, so it's just...
Technically, they do back then. That was the thing I saw. They had it, but they...
But they don't have a database. It wasn't like
organized or... Yeah, they had fingerprinting.
Oh, like a database thing.
Technology.
Yeah, you can get a fingerprint on there, but you got nothing to match it to.
All right, they knew about fingerprints, but they didn't really do it.
Yeah.
Like, it was a thing then, but they didn't do it. Police ruled out robbery as motivation for the attacks, as money and valuables left in plain sight were not stolen by the intruder. The razor used to kill the couple was found to belong to Andrew Maggio, the brother of the deceased. Oh, so it was his brother. The brother of the deceased who conducted a barbershop on Camp Street. His employee... Esteban Torres told police that Maggio had removed the razor from his shop 2 days prior to the murder, explaining that he wanted to have a nick honed from the blade.
Old-timey hat?
This guy sounds...
Very suspicious.
Guilty.
Maggio, who lived in the adjoining apartment to his brother's residence, discovered his slain brother and sister-in-law roughly 2 hours after the attack had occurred, upon hearing strange groaning noises through the wall. Like,
I'm in a lot of pain.
brother, come see. Come help me. My face has been blasted into oblivion.
Does it look bad?
That's a weird moment. Do I look cool?
Kind of look like Spawn, but with axe. The ugly Spawn.
Michael Jai White, I thought you were.
Yeah.
All by him.
I was.
Yeah, I would like to look like Michael Jai White.
He's with huge. Spawn face.
Maggio blamed his failure to hear any noises related to the attack that had occurred in the early morning hours on his intoxicated state as he had returned home after a night of celebration.
On Bourbon Street.
Prior to his departure.
The Saints had just won. Navy. He was on Bourbon Street. He got fucked up. He went to Lipsticks and then back home.
Man.
Police, however, were nonetheless surprised that he failed to hear the intruder as he had made a forced entry into the home. Well, fucking people sleeping there didn't hear it either. So.
Yeah.
Andrew Maggio became the police chief's prime suspect in the crime, yet was released after investigators were unable to break down his statement, as well as his account of an unknown man who was supposedly seen lurking near the residence prior to the murders.
They couldn't break down a statement because he was speaking Italian.
This goddamn Italian... gibberish.
Speak English, goddammit.
Something about gabagoo all the time.
Gorlami.
It was a murder.
I was imagining Sopranos, but that's way...
Never saw it. Sucks.
Me neither.
Can't get past the first episode. Love I've it. Watched the first episode like 3 times.
I've never tried to watch
terrible.
It.
I like it.
Terrible.
Catherine Maggio was the wife of Joseph Maggio. Her throat was cut so deep that her head was nearly severed from her shoulders. You got her good. Unlike Joseph, Catherine did not survive long after the attack,
good.
If at all, and died before her husband's brother found them. The killer wrote a message on the pavement nearby reading, Miss Maggio will set up tonight, just like Miss Tooney, theorized to be a reference to Anthony and Joanna Scambria, Italian greengrocers who were attacked with an axe in 1911. So that's, you know, the original axe murderer that they think this guy's copying. Resulting in the death of Miss Scambria, Joanna Scambria was reportedly known by customers as Miss Tony, but he spelled it wrong.
Miss Tony.
Mr. Tony, your head is a missing.
Where's your head?
Where am I going to get my Parmigiano oregano?
Oh, where's your head?
Whoa, yeah, the floor.
You made a mess of Mr. Tony.
There goes the Italian listeners that we had.
I feel like we don't need a story. We just make fun of Italians this whole episode.
There goes that one Italian listening.
Yeah. Thanks, guy. It was fun while it lasted.
He hates himself, too.
Yeah, fuck you.
All right, next murder.
Of spaghetti.
Next to murder
victim. Louis Bessemer and his mistress, Harriet Lowe, were attacked in the early morning...
Mistress.
Murdering.
Yeah, I guess.
He's a mistress in the morning.
That was Wario. We were attacked early in the morning hours of June 27th, 1918, in the quarters at the back of his grocery, where he was located at the corner of DeGeneres and Lapard Streets.
Yep.
Not Bourbon. Bessemer was struck with a hatchet above the right temple, which resulted in a possible skull fracture and probably a cut.
Is this axe not sharp? I think it would just like... Doesn't sound like it.
You need a bandage.
You should have sharpened that before I came over to murder you with it.
The fuck, man.
He's fractured his skull and that's it.
Lowe was hacked over the left ear and found unconscious when the police arrived at the scene.
That axe sucks.
It's their axe. He's a different axe.
Yeah.
He's using their own axes. Yeah.
Very blunt. I guess back then in 1918.
I mean, if you're chopping a lot of wood and you don't sharpen it,
yeah,
you don't sharpen it before, not after.
Well, I was going to say earlier, we don't have very cold winters, but I mean,
you got to cook with it. How are they going to cook their gumbo?
That's what I was going to say.
And their pizza pie.
They got more to do. Their houses are not as good as ours.
I mean, it probably could be cold in August, but you probably got to bring that shit to the fucking axe sharpening man. People probably don't have.
That guy's doing it.
It's like
the axe sharpener,
you don't bring your
man.
Sharp your axes to me to sharpen. Mm. I'll sharpen them with your face.
Yes, but woo-hoo! nobody's ever brought up that.
Maybe not. The couple was discovered shortly after 7 a.m. on the morning of the attack by John Zenka, a driver of a bakery wagon who came to the grocery store in order to make his routine delivery. Zenka found both Bessemer and
muffins on the bodies because he sees them spills them on him
and just takes the money out the register and leaves. Zenka found both Bessemer and Lowe in a puddle of their own blood, both bleeding from their heads. The axe, which had belonged to Bessemer himself, was found in the bathroom of the apartment. He had to drop a mad dump before he left. All that murderer makes him gassy.
Just. Being scared makes him fart.
Bessemer later stated to police that he had been sleeping when he was bashed with a hatchet. Almost immediately, police arrested potential suspect Louis Ubicon, a then 41-year-old African-American man, definitely the suspect.
He did it.
Who had been employed in Bessemer's store for just a week before the attacks. He was promptly hanged. Just kidding, I don't know.
Oh.
No evidence existed which could have proved the man guilty. Yet police arrested him nonetheless, stating that Ubicon had offered conflicting accounts of his whereabouts on the morning of the attack. And then he was hanged.
No, fuck that. That's what people do. They hang black people.
Right. And then they're like, we solved it, guys.
Sorry.
It was the...
Thought we had...
He struck again. Now that's going to be somebody else.
We thought we had it with that one. He was black.
The Negro man.
That was it.
I had this sketch in my mind.
Who else would have done it?
I guarantee
you. A God-fearing white man?
I guarantee you I know what he looks like.
He looks just like that right over there.
Come on! Don't say the words. Just
we're in New Orleans. What do you want me to say?
Subtle. A little bit more subtle. George.
Boat citizen.
I don't know what that
sounds
means.
Like so they were brought over on a boat.
Okay, sounds like a good compromise. Fine, fine. It could be any. I don't know.
Whatever. I'm not going to say that.
Yeah, thanks.
Shortly after the attempted murder, Lowe stated that she remembered having been attacked by a mulatto man.
Mulatto.
Oh.
That's a, you're not black, but you know what? You're mulatto.
Mixed. Her statement was discounted by police due to her delusion state. She's a woman. She's hysterical.
Yeah, she's on crack.
The robbery was said to be the only possible explanation for the attack, yet no money or valuables were removed from the couple's home. Ubicon was later released as police were unable to gather sufficient evidence to hold him accountable for the crimes. But they didn't care, so he was hung.
Hung.
Media attention soon turned to Bessemer himself, as a series of letters written in German, Russian, and Yiddish were discovered in a trunk of the man's home.
The black guy's home?
Yeah.
No, the fucking guy that got attacked. They're saying he did it. He hatcheted him on himself.
Okay.
Remember, he only got bashed on the head a little bit.
Oh.
He didn't even get a cut, just a skull fracture.
Got it.
So they found all the weird shit in his trunk. Police suspected that Bessemer was a German spy, and the government officials began a full investigation of his potential espionage. Weeks later, after going in and out of consciousness, Harriet Lowe told police that she thought Bessemer was in fact a German spy. What a bitch. Which led to his immediate arrest. 2 days later, Bessemer was released, and two lead investigators on the case were demoted due to unacceptable police work. Like, we had a black man right here, and you let him go, and you arrested the white man.
Case closed.
You're fired.
You're fired.
Bessemer was once again arrested in August 1918 after Harriet Lowe, who lay dying in Charity Hospital after a failed surgery, stated that it was he who attacked her more than a month previously with his hatchet. He was charged with murder and served 9 months in prison before being acquitted on May 1st, 1919, after a 10-minute jury deliberation.
That's got to be a record.
10 minutes?
10 minutes.
For murder?
Yeah.
It's like, well, there's no witnesses anymore.
You did it.
Can't trust a woman.
No.
I'm sure she was hysterical on her deathbed.
She's pregnant on crack. Probably got scurvy or some shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's on her period. Harriet Lowe was attacked while in bed with Louis Bessemer. As mentioned previously, Lowe was hacked above the left ear and found unconscious at the scene of the crime before she was rushed to Charity Hospital. Lowe became the center of a media circus as she continually made scandalous and often false statements relating to both the attacks and the character of Louis Bessemer, because she's a lying whore.
Bitch.
Some of which are described in the preceding description. The Times-Picayune.
Oh, nice.
Sensationalized Lowe. Been around a long time.
Times. Yeah. Oh, that's our local.
It's New Orleans. Well, Picayune.
But it made big news.
Times-Picayune.
My dad
from Hammond.
Well, I don't know. My dad got Times-Picayune. I don't know if he still does.
Oh, man. Your dad's very scary. I bet he like sat in his recliner and was like, I'm reading the Times-Picayune.
That's exactly what happened.
Dirty D, don't you fucking talk to me.
You got the funnies, Dad.
You shut your mouth, bitch.
No, you're, my dad never did
that. You're never like going to be as tall as me.
And I never was. I'm hoping my son can beat me and be taller than my dad.
That'd be cool. I mean, goddamn, kid's going to be huge.
Me and my wife are both tall. My dad is tall, but my mom is short. So yeah, I never had the chance to be taller.
Yeah.
But my son does. One day.
One day.
We'll be the tallest.
Break the cycle.
The tallest of the D's.
That's why you married your wife. You're trying to make
a tall son.
You're trying to make a
the taller family. Son than
trying
my dad.
Trying to make a tall race.
Got Attack on Titans.
Your dad fucked you up so much that you're going to be taller than you one day, Dad. My son's going to kick your ass.
He's going to be so tall. So tall.
You'll see.
The Times-Picayune sensationalized Lowe and her outspoken nature upon discovering that she was not the wife of Bessemer, but his mistress.
Ooh.
Little minx.
She got a hairy pussy.
And probably a tuft around her butthole, too.
Dude, why are you going to make everything gross?
It's like the 1918s of New Orleans.
Yeah, they shave their buttholes.
Just not their legs. Or their bush.
Ouch. Yeah. Man, how they doing that with a straight razor around their buttholes? Fuck.
That's why they were all dying.
One little nick.
You got an artery back there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you cut that shit, you're dead.
Got an artery in your butthole?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, big one.
What's it called?
I have no idea.
Butthole
Artemis Maximus.
A charity hospital source discovered the scandal.
Another one.
When Bessemer asked to be directed to the room of Miss Harriet Lowe.
Look at Aaron.
Why are you dancing?
He's thirsty. He's a good dancer.
And was inevitably...
Check this out and put it on TikTok.
And he was inevitably denied access as no woman by that name was a patient. Bessemer's legal wife arrived from Cincinnati in the days immediately following the discovery.
Whoa.
His wife was on a business trip. What kind of woman is that? Which further inflamed the ongoing drama.
I'm inflamed too.
Lowe further gained media attention when she repeatedly made statements which voiced her dislike of the New Orleans chief of police, as well as her reluctance to comply with police questioning. Hysterical. After the truth of her marital status was revealed publicly, Lowe told reporters from the Times-Picayune that she would no longer aid the police in their investigation, and she suspected that it had been Chief Mooney who first informed the press of the scandal. They'd never seen a non-married woman back then.
Fucking whore.
Despite the scandal and her delirious statements which suggested that Bessemer was a German spy, Lowe returned to the home she shared with Bessemer weeks after the attack. Whore's gonna whore. One side of her face was partially paralyzed due to the severity of the attack.
Ugh, gross.
I want to let her back in.
Yeah. Time for a new whore.
Yeah, you're just the mistress. Yeah. I'm not gonna keep you around.
On to the next one.
Lowe died August 5th, 1918, just 2 days after doctors performed surgery in an effort to repair her partially paralyzed ugly face.
Who's paying for that?
In 1918?
Yeah. I guess the man.
They got free insurance?
Well, no, but the man, you got to have a prettier mistress than that.
I hope they have a good blacksmith for that hospital.
But he didn't.
Blacksmith?
Yeah, don't they get, like, surgeons use that kind of?
Nope.
But they apparently didn't, he didn't use a good enough surgeon because she died.
Yeah. I don't think they started washing their hands until later.
He was like,
they knew about washing their hands in the 1920s.
Yeah, they did.
Oh.
He was like, I'm going to help you, baby. I swear. You're going to live.
Your I face got this is, doctor.
Your face is going to be beautiful again.
Kill her. I'll give you $100 if you kill that bitch.
She's ugly as fuck. She makes me want to throw up.
I can't even come anymore.
Just prior to her death, Lowe told authorities that she suspected it was Louis Bessemer who had attacked her.
Do it. Do it. Come on. Kill me. I'm here. Come on. Do it now. Kill me.
Classic
Schwarzenegger.
So Anna Schneider was attacked in the early evening hours of August 5th, 1918. The 8 months pregnant 28-year-old of Elmira Street woke up to find a dark figure standing over her and was bashed in the face repeatedly. Her scalp had been cut open and her face was completely covered in blood. Miss Schneider was discovered after midnight by her husband, Ed Schneider, who was returning late from work. Schneider claimed that she remembered nothing of the attack and gave birth to a healthy baby girl 2 days after the incident.
Nice. Hey, I was just going to say, why are you going for a hand? She's got a big ass belly.
He was already there.
Chop the belly
and take the baby. Kill
two for one.
Well, maybe he didn't want to kill the baby.
Oh, he's such a nice guy.
Yeah, he's not a monster. Maybe
his arm was tired after the first time.
Her husband told police that nothing was stolen from the house besides $6 or $7 that had been in his wallet, so he did steal stuff. The windows and doors of the apartment appear to have not been forced open, and authorities came to the conclusion that the woman was most likely attacked with a lamp that had been on a nearby table, seeing as it was covered in blood and dented up to shit.
You have electricity?
Probably not all the houses in 1920.
I was thinking lantern, but I'm not sure.
If it was a...
I don't know. I probably didn't have electricity back then.
So you bashed her with a lamp. Candle, kerosene lamp. A kerosene lamp? Well, shouldn't everything be on fire?
Maybe it wasn't lit at the time.
She was sleeping. It wouldn't be on.
Yep. You guys both right.
James Gleason, who police said was an ex-convict, was arrested shortly after Schneider was found. Gleason was later released due to complete lack of evidence and stated that he originally ran from authorities because he had so often been arrested. Lead investigators began to publicly speculate that the attack was related to the previous incidents involving Bessemer and Maggio.
He got warned, so we got to get out of here.
In a run from the popos. Next person, Joseph Romano.
Jeez, we've been talking for like an hour now. There's so many people.
I know.
We're not even got to like the good part yet.
Ooh, there's good one.
What the heck?
Joseph Romano was an elderly man living with his two nieces, Pauline and Mary Bruno. Pauline's Bruno. A pretty one, and Mary Bruno's a gross one.
Yeah, she's a Mongo.
Yeah.
They keep her in the basement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
On August 10th, 1918, Pauline and Mary awoke to the sound of a commotion in the adjoining room where their uncle resided.
What are you doing up here, Mongo? Get back down to the basement.
Upon entering the room, the sisters discovered that their uncle had taken a serious blow to the head, which resulted in two open cuts. The assailant was fleeing the scene as they arrived, yet the girls were able to distinguish that he was a dark-skinned, heavy-set man who wore a dark suit and a slouched hat. I don't know what that is.
He had a cape?
I don't know. I don't think that's what that means. Romano, although seriously injured, was able to walk to the ambulance once it arrived. They had ambulances?
Well, yeah.
Yet died two days later due to the severe head trauma. Noises
Move.
So he died 2 days later from severe head trauma. The home had been ransacked, yet no items were stolen from Romano. Authorities found a bloody axe in the backyard and discovered that a panel to the back door had been chiseled away, just like on the first murder.
It seems like multiple people.
That's another theory. Yeah,
they keep changing up the...
Well, I mean, this one is probably maybe the same.
Well, they didn't steal... One guy stole, but this one they didn't steal, but then...
None of the other ones.
Really. Yeah, you said one stole only one. Like $7. Yeah. One. Yeah. So maybe that was a different guy. It seems like...
I mean, they don't know. Like, they never caught anybody. They assume it's the same guy. It might not be changing
up his MO. But I mean... If he's just going into random houses, you're going to have to change up. You have to change it.
And he's just finding whatever he finds to kill him.
I mean, what if one night he's just like, I'm going out on bourbon. I need that $7.
Why are you so stuck on bourbon?
Because I fucking love Bourbon Street, man. But, I mean, it just keeps changing up his MO. Like, it's a lot of, he's just breaking into houses and he kills them with whatever he finds. But then sometimes there's different numbers of people in there, so he does different things. And then he steals something. Well, I think we only talked about one guy that stole, what was it, like $7?
$7.
Yeah.
The guy just said it was missing from his wallet. Maybe his wife took it.
On bourbon, right?
Bitch, dude.
That's probably what it was.
Stole it on bourbon. Yeah.
The Romano murder created a state of extreme chaos in the city, with residents living in constant fear of an axeman attack. Police received a slew of reports in which citizens claimed to have seen an axeman lurking in the New Orleans neighborhoods. That'd be scary.
Yeah.
A few men even
feel like it's way scarier now.
Now there's just gunmans all over.
A lot of gats around.
Gatmans. A lot of
gatmans.
There's a motherfucker carrying an axe.
Motherfucker's got it. See, if I go on bourbon, or any neighborhood in New Orleans now, there's a fucking axeman. I feel like that's way scarier than a gatman.
True. It's a scary visual.
If he's using an axe as his main weapon, he probably knows how to throw it. So it's probably, if you're not close enough, he's going to throw it at you. Or his
accomplishment is the gatman, and he's just like going to get you if you get too close and like cause a harm to the axeman. I don't know.
Nobody go to New Orleans. It's scary. Yeah,
they got axemans and gatmans. A few men even called to report that they had found axes in their backyards. He's just going around leaving axes. Yeah,
those are your axes.
John D'Antonio, a then retired Italian detective. I can't think of Italian detective words.
Oh, the one. Oh, sorry. I was thinking of the actor from.
It was a murder.
That was terrible.
It was.
What are you saying?
Running Scared, the kind of corrupt cop guy. He wasn't corrupt. But that Italian policeman.
Cool story, bro.
Yeah. So John D'Antonio, the then retired Italian detective, made public statements in which he hypothesized that the man who had committed the Axeman murders were the same who had killed several individuals in 1911. The retired...
I'm sorry. Hold on.
The retired detective cited similarities in the manner by which the two sets of homicides had been committed, as reason to assume that they had been conducted by the same individual.
I got this.
D'Antonio described the potential killer as an individual of dual personalities who killed without motive. The type of individual D'Antonio stated could very likely have been a normal, law-abiding citizen who was often overcome by an overwhelming desire to kill.
Do it! Do it! Come on! Kill me! I'm here! Come on! Do it now! Kill me!
He later went on to describe the killer as a real-life Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
These nuts! Got him!
That's all I
got. Got him!
I'm sorry.
Next victim.
Charles
Cortamagala. Cortamagala was an Italian immigrant who lived with his wife, Rosie Cortamagala.
Cortamagala.
And infant daughter, Mary Cortamagala.
It means...
I like turtles.
On the corner of Jefferson Avenue and the 2nd Street in Gretna, Louisiana. And 2nd and 2nd Street.
That's kind of far, right?
Gretna's basically New Orleans.
Okay.
A New Orleans suburb across the Mississippi River. On the night of March 10th, 1919... screams were heard coming from the Cortamagala residence.
Cortamagala.
I like turtles.
Grocer Elorendo Giordano rushed across the street to investigate. Upon his arrival, Giordano noticed that Charles Cortamagala, his wife, and their daughter, daughter Cortamagala, had been attacked by the unknown intruder.
Little baby Cortamagala.
Cortamagala.
Rosie stood in the doorway with a serious head wound, clutching her deceased daughter. Sad. Charles lay on the floor, bleeding profusely. The couple was rushed to Charity Hospital, where it was discovered that both had suffered skull fractures. Nothing was stolen from the house, but a panel in the back door had been chiseled away, and a bloody axe was found on the back porch of the home. Charles was released 2 days later, while his wife remained in the care of doctors.
Was it their axe?
It's always their axe.
All right.
Every time it's their axe. Upon gaining full consciousness, Rosie made claims that Orlando Giordano and his 18-year-old son, Frank,
I like turtles.
I knew you were going to do that.
were responsible for the attacks.
They're blaming their own family?
It's spelled Orlando, but with an I in front.
Orlando,
a 69-year-old man, was in too poor of a health to have committed the crimes. Not that old.
How old were they?
69,
dudes!
Well, back then, that's like 84.
That motherfucker's like, should have been dead like 20 years ago.
Frank Giordano, more than 6 feet tall and weighing over 200 pounds, would have been too large to have fit through the panel in the back door. That boy fat. Charles Cortamagala vehemently denied his wife's claims, yet police nonetheless arrested the two and charged them with murder.
Fuck him, dude.
The men would later be found guilty.
There's no evidence.
We don't need evidence. Frank was sentenced to hang. Oh, they hanged the Italian.
Dude.
And his father to life in prison.
What?
Charles Cortamagala divorced his wife after the trial. But she's a lying whore. Almost a year later, Rosie announced that she had falsely accused the two out of jealousy and spite. Her statement.
Did they let the guy out of prison?
Her statement was, no, he was sentenced to hang. This was 2 years later.
What about the
other one? No, a year later. He already did. After her statement was the only evidence against the Giordanos, and they were released from jail shortly thereafter. So they did get out of jail.
I hope they strangled her ass right after that. I would get out of jail, kill her, and then just like be like, hey, boys, I'm back.
Cortamagala.
I know, I'd be fucking pissed.
Fuck yeah.
Like, I'm murdering you for real this time.
Hey, remember when you said I murdered you?
Guess what? You were right.
What's that Jennifer Lopez movie called? Where
Geely?
The Cube.
Selena.
Yeah.
Anaconda?
Yeah, those are the ones.
Rosie Cortamagala was the wife of immigrant El Labrador Charles Cortamagala. She was attacked alongside her husband. This is the same woman. While sleeping with the baby in her arms, she was badly wounded by the axeman but survived the incident. We already talked about her.
Yeah, we did.
They killed the baby.
No. Mary Cortamagala was the 2-year-old daughter of Charles and Rosie Cortamagala. She was killed while sleeping in her mother's arms with a single blow to the back of the neck, and she and her parents were attacked. So, I mean, that's the all
this
those people.
Piece of shit. Let's get him.
Let's get him.
He killed a baby. Baby Cortamagala.
What a bitch.
Bitch, dude.
So, after this murder, there's a new twist.
Is it a Shyamalan twist?
No.
Is it like
maybe a, like a fifth movie in Shyamalan twist?
Yeah, we don't want to watch this. We're done.
Maybe more like a Spider-Man 3 Homecoming? Musical number twist.
Oh.
You're losing the scene.
The Times-Picayune received a taunting letter on March 14th that promised another attack.
The paper promised another attack?
Well, no, the Times-Picayune received a letter on March, what did I say, March 14th?
Get to the That's letter. Coming up.
Oh, shit.
Okay.
Oh, we should put another letter on March 14th.
So.
Saying we'll kill babies.
This is the contents of the letter.
The letter from hell. Hell, March 13th, 1919. Esteemed mortal, they have never caught me. And they never will. They have never seen me, for I am invisible, even as the ether that surrounds your earth.
Fuck, dude.
I am not a human being, but a spirit and a demon from your hottest hell. I am that, you Orleanians, and you foolish police call the Axeman. When I see fit, I shall come and claim other victims. I alone know whom shall. I alone know who they shall be. I shall leave no clue except my bloody axe, bemirsed with blood and brains of he who I have sent below to keep me company. If you wish, no, there's more.
Oh, there's more. There's more.
If you wish, you may tell the police to be careful not to rile me. Of course, I am a reasonable spirit. I take no offense at the way that they have conducted their investigation into the past. In fact, they have been so utterly stupid as to not only amuse me, but His Satanic Majesty, Francis Joseph, etc.
It's a literate ghost.
But tell them to beware. Let them not try to discover who I am, for it were better that we were never born than to incur the wrath of the Axeman. I think that there is a need of such a warning, for I feel sure the police will always dodge me, as they have in the past. They are wise and know how to keep away from all harm. Undoubtedly, you Orleanians think of me as a horrible murder monster.
Murder? Oh, man.
Undoubtedly, you Orleanians think of me as a horrible murderer, which I am.
But that's not cool.
But I could be worse. I could be worse if I wanted to. If I wished, I would pay a visit to your city every night. At will, I could slay thousands of your best citizens, for I am in close relationship with the Angel of Death. Now, to be exact, at 12:15 earthly time, on next Tuesday night, I'm gonna pass over New Orleans again. In my infinite mercy. In my infinite mercy, I'm going to make a little proposition for you people. Here it is. I'm very fond of jazz music, and I swear by all the devils in the nether regions that every person shall be spared whose home a jazz band is full swing at the time that I have just mentioned. If everyone has a jazz band going, well then, so much the better for you people. One thing is certain, and that is that some of your people who do not jazz it out on that specific Tuesday night, if there be any, will get the axe. Well, as I am cold and crave the warmth of my native Tartarus, and it is about time I leave your earthly home, I will cease my discourse, hoping that thou wilt publish this, but it may go well with thee. I have been... And I am, will be, the worst spirit that has ever existed, either in fact or realm of fantasy, the Axeman.
Did that he write that in ink?
I don't know. So,
did you say that was scary as shit?
It was a scary one up until he was like, I'm all about that ass, that jazz.
I'm all about jazz that it jazz. Up. You guys not playing jazz.
Jazz it up for me tonight. Some people don't think that was just like a letter from some random person and not really the murderer.
Mm.
But it did inspire the jazz song that is called Don't Scare Me, Papa. That's it. Jazz it up.
Nice. I like it.
That was nice.
I like it.
Don't scare me, Papa. And on that night, the jazz did jazz it and no murders were had.
Oh, dude, I bet that was a fun night.
Everybody was jazzing it up. It was the best night New Orleans ever had.
Brought us together as a city.
Yeah, let's stay out with the jazz and have fun so we don't get killed.
Until Steve Boca, age grocer, was attacked as he slept in his bedroom by an axe-wielding intruder on August 10th, 1919.
I never liked that guy anyway.
Yeah, so it was a long time after.
Must be money.
A few months. Boca awoke during the night to find a dark figure looming over his bed. Upon regaining consciousness, Boca ran to the streets to investigate the intrusion and found that his head had been cracked open. Well, goddamn head's cracked open.
One more time. He woke up, saw he woke a shadowy figure,
well,
and
no.
then went out.
No, he saw the shadowy figure and then got clobbered. But then he got knocked unconscious, regained consciousness, ran into the street to investigate, and found that his head had been cracked open.
Fuck, that sucks.
The grocer ran to the home of his neighbor, Frank Canusa. Where he lost consciousness and collapsed. Nothing has been taken from the home yet.
How embarrassing.
Oh, yeah, you get there and you just pass out with a cracked open head.
Well, they're your neighbors and stuff, and you're just like, hey, man, I'm not feeling very well.
I'm feeling woozy, yeah. I got a headache.
I think something's wrong with me.
Your head looks like a meatball.
Like a two of meatballs.
I feel it right here. Not so much right here.
But right here. I did rewatch that like within the past month.
Yeah.
Oh, still nice. Definitely holds up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Nothing had been taken from the home, yet once again, a panel in the back door of the home had been chiseled away.
Sounds like the chiseler.
It's a midnight chiseler.
Yep. Naming guy. At it again.
Boca recovered from his injuries, but could not remember any details of the trauma. His attack took place after the emergence of the infamous Axeman letter.
I bet he couldn't remember because his face was his head was in half.
I mean, that's hard to remember when you
got memories on both you got memories on both sides of your face.
Next murder.
Oh,
Sarah Lawman was attacked on the night of September 3rd, 1919. Neighbors came to check on the young woman who had lived alone and broke into the home when Lawman did not answer. Oh, the people broke into the home when she did not answer.
Local whore.
Well, she was 19.
Yeah, local whore.
I mean, he could be a young woman living alone at 19.
I don't think so. I think it's illegal.
Local
then.
Whore.
They discovered the 19-year-old lying unconscious on the bed, suffering from a severe head injury and missing several teeth. She was also a hillbilly.
Oh, no.
They weren't knocked out. She was just ugly.
Brush your teeth, bitch.
The intruder had entered the apartment through an open window and attacked the woman with a blunt object.
So no chisel this time.
No, but a bloody axe was discovered on the front lawn of the building. Lawman recovered from her injuries, yet couldn't recall any details from the attack.
So he's doing the same things, but he's changing it up a little bit.
If it's the same guy. Or now they're
true.
Somebody else is like, I'm going to beat the fuck out of this woman and just I'm going to have an axe and throw it in the front yard, throw them off my scent. But then you could be pinned with all the other murders if you get caught.
That's true.
It's bad.
Change it up a little bit.
Next murder.
Bash your teeth in.
Yeah. Mike Pepitone.
Oh, we know some Pepitones.
Pepitone?
Don't say her name.
Oops.
I got to bleep that out. Bleep it out.
Was attacked on the night of October 27th, 1919. His wife was awakened by a noise and arrived at the door of his bedroom just as a large axe-wielding man was fleeing the scene. She also said she saw two figures. So this is the only time anybody saw two. She's
probably drunk.
Yeah, she's probably a lying whore.
Yeah, seeing double.
Mike Pepitone had been struck in the head and was covered in his own blood.
I think we know. I feel like I know a Pepitone.
Got to bleep it out later.
Yeah, bleep it out.
Blood splatter covered the majority of the room, including a painting of the Virgin Mary. So I saw on some places, but a lot of them didn't say what happened, but I saw somewhere it said he was hit in the head like 27 or 30-something times with a metal spike that is used to hold down circus tents, and that there was a circus in town, but they don't know who did it.
Which ain't like the blunt end or the sharp
end?
Well, I would imagine
the blunt end if he's got hit 30-ish times and survived.
That's all right. I'm just asking the question, man.
He was stabbed in the head with a giant metal chisel
27 times
and survived.
And lived.
Mrs. Pepitone, the mother of six children, was unable to describe any characteristics of the
killer.
We
know Mrs. Pepitone.
Oh, yeah. Was she a teacher?
The Pepitone murder was the last of the alleged Axeman attacks.
This last one?
That was the last one.
She survived?
Never. Well, the man was attacked. She just saw the person flee.
What a whore.
And didn't do nothing.
What a bitch.
Nothing,
man,
to stop it. But she probably said, ah!
Yeah. Didn't even try to save her husband.
What a whore. Suspects. Crime writer Colin Wilson speculates the Axeman could have been Joseph Monfrey.
I've always hated that guy.
A man shot to death in Los Angeles in December 1920.
But I never thought he did this one.
By the widow of Mike Pepitone.
Ooh.
The Axeman's last known victim. Wilson's theory has been widely repeated in other true crime books and websites. However, true crime writer Michael Newton searched New Orleans and Los Angeles public police and court records, as well as newspaper archives, and failed to find any evidence of a man with the name Joseph Monfrey or similar having been assaulted or killed in Los Angeles. So it might not be true.
Possibly.
Newton was also not able to find any information that Mrs. Pepitone, identified in some sources as Esther Albano and another simply as a woman who claimed to be Pepitone's widow, was arrested, tried, or convicted for such a crime, or indeed had been in California. Newton notes that Monfrey was not an unusual surname in New Orleans at the time of the crimes. It appears that there actually may have been an individual named Joseph Monfrey, or Mumfrey, in New Orleans who had a criminal history.
Or his sons.
I really fucked it up this time.
Mumford or his sons. And who had a criminal history and who may have been connected with organized crime. I don't think it's on this one, but the organized crime was like a blackmailing ring. So like they would go around blackmailing people for money. And that was their job.
Are you black?
I'm going to send you some mail.
Black. Do you like mail?
You know blacks can't get mail.
You son of a bitch.
However, local records for the period are not extensive enough to allow confirmation of this. Wilson's explanation is an urban legend, and there is no more evidence now on the identity of the killer than there was at the time of the crime. Two of the alleged early victims of the Axeman, an Italian couple named Shamaraba, were shot by an intruder in the lower Ninth Ward. That's the bad one.
Bing, bing.
Home in early morning hours of May 16th.
Lower Ninth Ward was bad back then, too.
Oh, I don't know. Has it not always been bad?
I guess so.
I mean, there was people getting shot in the 1912s.
It must have started back then. Shit, why are people living there still?
The male Shashambra survived while his wife died. In newspaper accounts, the prime suspect is referred to by the name of Momfrey more than once. While radically different than the Axeman's usual modus operandi, if Joseph Monfrey was the Axeman, the Shashambras may well have been early victims of the future serial killer.
Are these those 1911?
This was 1912, so part of the... It was between 1911 and 1912 was the original. According to scholar Richard Warner, the chief suspect in the crimes was Frank Doc Monfrey, who used the alias Leon Joseph Monfrey.
Mumfrey and Suds.
Mr. Mumfrey's Garden District jazz business previously struggled, was noted by many in the community as seeming to do unusually good business once the city was compelled by a threat of violence to hire jazz bands and play jazz records.
Good song.
Yep.
So it was the jazz company this the whole time.
God damn it. No wonder jazz is so popular.
Yeah, you got to play it or you die.
You got to kill a bunch of people.
Whoa.
And that's the Axeman of New Orleans.
All right.
What a twist. Somebody fart.
Yep. All right. Final thoughts.
Oh, yeah.
Shawnee first.
That was a good. That was an entertaining story.
I have no idea. I feel like there's multiple people that was.
That's what it's probably. That's what people think. That it was multiple people. And that the letter was not from any murderer, that it was just somebody wrote it and sent it. But then the letter also is why some people think it was like a demon or a ghost.
Demons
who also writes letters to the Times-Picayune.
So taking the demons or ghosts out of it, it seems like multiple people.
People thought War of the World was real on the radio.
We're in 1918.
Oh, well, they probably treated it like the same thing.
It's just like hysteria.
So Sean's saying aliens.
Yeah.
No, he's saying an alien broadcast fiction. What is it? Show that scared them into thinking it was an axe murderer.
Yeah,
it's actually just a show.
It's all fake news.
Yeah.
It's the media playing it up.
Everybody apparently just had axes laying around willy-nilly. So people was murdering people was like, I'm just going to use this axe. And then they all got turned into one man.
How else are you going to chop your woods?
Right. Or your
face.
Italians.
All right, guys. Hope you liked that episode. Remember to like us and share us on Facebook. We're doing lots of stuff on Facebook and Instagram.
You're going to start TikTok, right? Start your TikTok?
We started TikTok a long time ago, but...
Yeah.
Really? Stupid.
His wife was going to do our TikTok.
Oh.
But she failed. She forgot about her or something. Anyways, again, you new listeners, thank you for being here. Please stay with us. We're not that terrible. If you're wherever you listen to us, remember to like us and share us. If you're on Apple Podcasts, if you don't mind, give us 5 stars if you like us, because that's the one that's going to help us grow. Tell your friends about us. If you want to hear a certain topic, we'll do it. Just send it to us at BearCanSpiritsShow@gmail.com or on Facebook or on Instagram. And remember, we'll see you next week. We'll see you next week.
Suck it.
We'll see you next week for another episode of the Beer Can Spiracy Show.
We keep it sexy. Hips and nips. Enjoy our meatballs and sausage. Whore is gonna whore.